Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Winter, spring, summer, fall, seasons change, we still keep it together.
Hey, Beverly Hills 90210 fans, are you ready to dive deep? Episode by episode, storyline by storyline, character by character, as we break down the making of your favorite zip code with your host, Charles
Rosen. Did I say
that? Yeah. Mary
Mullen. Foolish thing about the real person, and we go, what? We're getting rid of this guy.
Pete Ferrero.
I'm feeling wonderful. Kathleen looks crush, TV crush worthy.
Like so many special guests and all your questions live on the Beverly Hills 90210 show. Oh yeah.
Well, here we are back live, Larry. This is
like
Wednesday, 5 o'clock. You're live with me, right?
Anything can happen.
It's not pre-recorded. We're joined by Drew Kinney again. Drew, how's everything going with you, man?
Excellent. Having a great summer.
That's awesome to hear. Yeah. Larry, last week we got to do something really great. We reunited.
Ooh, yeah.
With 90210 OMG, Jenny and Tori's podcast, and we did a big celebration with Jason Priestley and Gabrielle Carteris and a whole slew of people to talk and honor Joey Tada. What was your experience like? What did you think?
You know, kumbaya. It was lovely. It was funny. It was resonant, and it was sad. And I learned a lot of stuff about drinking on the set. Which I never knew as a producer that was going on, but that's cool. I said, well, you know, we were smoking joints on the other side. Yeah, you were drinking there. But anyway, it was just great. I thought it was great to see everyone's faces. And I think, you know, Joey would have had a good chuckle at it, you know?
Oh, I think he would have absolutely loved to see it and hope. And I want to always acknowledge that we, you know, I hope that Kelly's doing okay. Kelly Tada, you know, we didn't really talk a bunch about her on the group podcast there because it was really about the Joey memories. But, you know, we are all thinking about her in this time. I know it must be devastating what she's going through. So I just want to make sure that we shout that out.
Because Tori and Jenny both said Kelly grew up on the set. I mean, they watched her grow up. And so I know they sent her best also.
Right. You got to spend a little time with Lindsay Price from season 8 through 10.
Yeah, she was. Yeah, I didn't know Lindsay at all. But yeah, she fit right in there. She was really cool. And Brian had his thing he did, which was great to hear his point of view on stuff.
Yeah, it was
and
really
also cool. Carol Potter. We had Carol Potter.
Carol and Matthew Lawrence. We had a whole group
I missed the Matthew part. Yeah, Chuck and I came in later.
Yeah, he brought up
we were the second tier.
he brought up a lot of great points about the disease itself, you know, Alzheimer's and how difficult that is and his sadness with all of that. It was really lovely. If you haven't had a chance to look at it, you know, you can watch the video here on Beverly Hills 90210show.com or you can listen to the audio, you know, or on 90210MG. It's all good stuff. Drew, start off with a little bit of a somber note. There's a few people that have passed in the last 6 or 7 weeks, and I wanted to give you an opportunity to talk about some of them, or all of them, starting with Joey Tada. You got any good Joey stories, or what are your memories?
Well, you know, I've been sitting to think about, you know, my office was right in front of stage 2. So stage 2 is where the Peach Pit was and the little swing set space behind there, which there's a set in tonight's show that was in that little swing set space. That's one thing that I remember today. And kind of between us was the extras holding room. And so like the ADs were always making the rounds and kind of moving people out. And when they were sort of between setups, Joey would wander over he didn't want to go all the way back the other side of the building. So he'd wander up to the front and kind of see what was going on. And he used to come into our office. And I always remember this about him. You know, a lot of people will, you know, got time to kill. So they'll come in your office, you know, and shoot the ball, kill a little bit of time to tell a couple of stories, you know, maybe a couple of jokes or something like that. And then they got to go back to what they're doing. And it's really just pleasantries, right? Because it's like that part where you're like, you've worked with these people for so long. I mean, that's when the people outside of something like this don't understand that, like, there were stand-ins and extras that we'd worked with for so long that were also like part of the family because I saw them all the time.
Right.
Like, they were always outside my office.
I think Shannon Doherty's stand-in looks a lot like Shannon Doherty, right? I've seen pictures and it's confusing as to who is in the picture.
Yeah, well, especially like if you're standing at like the catering line and like you're looking at the backs of people and you think, well, Shannon.
Right, exactly. We should find her.
Sitting in, you know, in my office, a lot of times sitting in my office, I would be like my back would be towards the door because that's where my drafting table was, and I'd be drawing something up and working on it. And the thing that Joey did that was really awesome was he would come in and he would ask me about the drawings that I was working on. And he would ask questions about things like, you know, why do you draw it this way? Like, why is that line thicker than this line? Kind of, like technical things, that are really in, it's not just, you know, I know you and we have conversations. It's I'm really interested in what it is you're doing and why you're doing it that way. Mm. And, you know, I mean, I know one of the reasons that, you know, that sort of came up was he had the time while those things were going on, because it would be, you know, a big scene and they would just need him to pass in the back. But now they've got another shot. So he's not needed for an hour.
Right.
He's got an hour to kill. Well, he already went and got something from craft services and talked to everybody there. And he's just kind of wandering. And I always remember that being really cool because, like, nobody else really just, like, came in and looked at it. I mean, Mike Cudlitz did because he was a construction coordinator.
Sure. Right. Yeah.
He had a vested interest because he wanted to know what he was going to make. And, you know, it wasn't necessarily like Joe was saying, oh, is this a set for me? You know, like, which way am I going to cut? Like,
sure. No. He just was interested in the work, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Because, you know, and it's really interesting because a lot of people, you know, we had a lot of guest stars who had been in the business for a long time. And that's one of the things that I think is one of those effects of being in the business for so long is that you end up realizing that you have to have more with people than just good morning and hey, can I get you a cup of coffee while I'm walking there?
Right.
There has to be something deeper. And he was always kind of interested in that. So that's one of the things I always sort of have thought about over the years about, you know, all the different people and just that one aspect of him coming in and taking such an interest, you know, and it's so mundane, like the thickness of pencil lead. You know,
did you always have an answer for him, or was sometimes it like, I don't really know, I just drew it that way?
I always had an answer, you know, I was thinking of, like, you know, what's one I could remember specifically. And it was when you're drawing something that has depth to it, like, let's say there's a wall with an opening and there's a recessed doorway, like a hotel room or something.
Sure.
That opening would have a thicker line. It's called spatial profiling. It helps you when you're looking at the drawing differentiate for what's foreground and background.
Got it.
And that was one of those conversations about why is that thicker than that? Like, what's the reason for that?
Yeah.
And he's the only person, I think, outside of a production designer, an art director, or a set designer, I've ever had that conversation with.
I think he's from a generation of show people. You know, it's a different generation.
When you decide
show people like no people, you know, it's just part of that thing. It's just a different kind of breed of people.
Yeah, it's Craig.
Also style wise, he's always kind of back in the Rat Pack kind of era.
I was gonna say,
Well,
Larry's gonna say, like, they talked a lot about on the thing that we did about him showing up with the briefcase, and he was always very professional and all that stuff. Do you guys both recall that, Larry?
No. I have no memory. Again, I didn't remember anything about him having a briefcase with shot glasses in it and stuff. People,
I don't
people
know that
drinking
either.
On the set.
Well, we found out that Tori
would have been happy with that, frankly. But
Tori and Joey were going to Playboy Mansion party.
That I can believe. Tori told that story about
the Playboy Mansion. Yeah, that was great.
Yeah, and I'm sure. I mean, he was like a safe harbor for all those girls, really. You know, someone they could hang with at a party and no one's going to hit on them. And, you know, Joey was, they all talked the same way. You know, Joey from that other generation of the kind of Rat Packy, schmoozy, hands-on kind of person that they all kind of liked the flirting in a lot of ways. But they never really, they never thought he crossed the line at all. So
right.
It's just a different generation.
Yeah.
Such a pleasure.
Yes. And then, of course, we also lost Jessica Klein, who's been on this podcast many times, a writer and whatnot. I don't know, Drew, if you had much interaction with her, but what are your thoughts on Jess?
You know, one of the things that, and I've been trying to think, like, too, you know, like, what's something I could sort of remember about her specifically more than just, you know, sort of that thing, because and Lara says, the writer's office at the stage was on the other side of my office from the casting office. Mm-hmm. And so anytime somebody came over, you know, we always walked by and said hello to each other. And but what I remember very specifically about Jessica, she was one of the first people I remember seeing this in production meetings, where, you know, when you're in a production meeting and all the players are together talking about what you're going to do, it's run by the first assistant director. And honestly, the first assistant director is the one who's running the meeting, and other people get asides. You know, the executive producer gets an aside. It's the first AD's meeting. And I can remember a lot of people being intimidated about, you know, how some assistant directors run those meetings, because they're very much like, I've got to get this over in an hour. Let's keep going. And Jessica wouldn't budge. If she had something to say, she was going to make sure that that got across. And I remember, you know, just sort of, you know, at first, I mean, like the first time, you know, I was a young, kind of inexperienced guy, sure, and thought, I don't really understand why somebody's pushing this hard over something like this.
Right.
But as time goes on, it's like I started realizing what kinds of things were going on and what they were fighting for, and yeah, realizing that what she was fighting for was something that mattered implicitly to driving the story.
Mm.
And it, you know, didn't really have anything to do with me, with a poster I'm doing, or, you know, a corner of a set and what color a wall is. And so I thought that was really interesting, because, I mean, I got to be a fly on the wall for those meetings for years and hear the sort of, you know, the conversations and the questions that people,
I mean,
have.
You're fighting for the script. I mean, she was very, very strong with that.
Yeah.
And absolutely, those were amazing meetings. Yeah. I'm just trying to think now, what are the names of the first ADs? Ken Stringer also.
We love Ken. We've tried to get Ken on here a few times.
Yeah, he did some really, and he also was the czar of the double ups.
Absolutely.
That's one of the reasons why I want to talk to Ken. I'll have to try to go back and try to make that happen, but he would be so great to talk to.
Oh, yeah. Ken's awesome. Absolutely.
Yeah. And then, of course, Denise Dowse. Did you have much interaction with her?
Honestly, I didn't have a lot of interaction with her, because, you know, she would come in and do her day playing thing. And it's sort of like where my office was at the front of the stage. The, like, where craft service and wardrobe and stuff were at the back, kind of opposite corner of stage one. And so when the actors come in, they came in the side entrance and parked over there, came in the back door and went to the dressing rooms or went to the, you know,
sure,
and out back. And unless they had some reason to come out front, I honestly didn't see a lot of those people very often, even though, you know, my office is also right by the high school set too.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, I could go in there and walk the stage all the time. You know, I've, you know, it's like one of those things where, like, I knew her well enough to, she knew my name, I knew her name, and I'd say, hello, how you doing? Have a nice day. But I honestly didn't really get much more of an interaction with her at that particular time.
Yeah, that's understandable. Totally. Yeah. I mean, just three very talented people. And, you know, just wanted to give you an opportunity to
win. Let's not have any more. Okay.
Please. Seriously. It's been,
we don't need these kind of ratings.
We've had enough, you know. All right. So, Larry, we're talking about this episode, Fade In, Fade Out.
Yes.
Right.
I was going to say, we should give the credits on it. It was written by Meredith Steam and directed by Jason Priestley.
Meredith Steam will not come on this podcast. So
it's so sad.
No response from the manager. Staff
job. She now is the president of the Writers Guild, my union, Chuck's union. And, I can't imagine. So this experience must have been so bad. She also was my neighbor growing up across the street from me.
Oh my God.
And I knew her since she was before high school, and also championed her joining the show and getting her first stuff. So it's hard for me not to take it a little personal, but I think she's ashamed. You know, she comes from the area, the back, where people were ashamed of the show. It was a spelling show, not a good show.
Yeah,
she then went on to create Cold Case and be one of the main writers.
I've never seen one episode of Cold Case.
And she big timed us, I guess. I don't know.
I've seen 298 episodes.
I thought maybe she might spark. Even if she was busy, she might just say, I'd like to do it, but I just can't now. But anyway, it's disappointing. Anyway, but Jason directed it, and we got such a charge out of him at the podcast we did with on OMG with us. when he remembered that he directed, he didn't remember he right did. Away. Because I was referencing, you know, Nat having a romantic story. And Jason was told us he was the one who got the linchpin for this story, which is the Roger Corman Film Festival. He actually got Roger Corman to come on the show.
So let's break all this down. There's a lot of things happening in Fade In, Fade Out. It really, really is. And we've covered a little bit of pieces with certain things, but never a full throttle. The big thing that's going on here in this, before we get to the Nat stuff, is that Bill Taylor is back in town, right? When we've never actually, we met Bill Taylor apparently at the high school graduation, but nobody has any memory of this man, right? Yeah, right. So you decide to say, we're going to bring Kelly's dad in.
You got to harvest all those goodies, like people's parents you haven't seen, that story, you know?
Right.
Yeah. And Bill Taylor, we could really build a great story for him. And we got a great actor. You should talk to Diane Young about. But John C. Reilly had been a mainstay of episodic television for 20 years and soaps and everything. He was what was called a leading man.
Right.
And he brought all that with him. And it's an interesting storyline because, like I said, we haven't seen this guy. And it's a good story in a way to break Kelly's heart and to motivate her to, you know, as we'll see, to using cocaine.
And so that's what's going on. Is the cocaine is that where this all starts with bringing the dad in? Are you saying?
Yeah, it's a way to kind of trigger Kelly. You know, we got to really break her down. So we believe again. You want to have emotional reality. You can't just jump at things. And so you really go at her heart, which is the father. It's so promising as the episode plays out. He comes there. They have a dinner, even with the ex-wife, with our friend Ann Gillespie playing Jackie. And everything's going well. He's looking for a house. He's going to move in there. And she's just never been. And set against that is her relationship with Colin. It's falling apart because of his cocaine use.
So let's talk about Colin. Let's talk about Jason Wiles. Now, for another person who says he'll be on the podcast very soon, and we have not heard from at all. So thank you for that, Jason.
Hopefully soon. We love Jason, and we love his work. So I'm just hoping he comes to you know.
This episode, Jason is Colin's full throttle. There's a scene where Kelly has told Bill Taylor about what's up, you know, with Colin, and they go visit him. And he's as high as a kite, right? So let's watch that real quick.
Hi.
Kelly.
I want you to meet my father.
Colin Robbins. Welcome.
Oh, thanks. Are we catching you at a bad time?
No. Actually, I can use the break.
Great loft.
Thanks. No, it's really a pleasure to meet you. I've heard so much about you.
Oh, same here. I really like to take a look at your work.
Feel free.
Thanks. Excuse me.
Thank you for coming. Thank you for bringing your father. I've missed you so much.
Thank you for being high.
Come on, Kelly.
I can see it in your eyes, Colin. The holidays are over and so are we. Dad, let's go.
It's a big rush, honey.
Colin's got to get back to his work.
Oh, I like your style, Colin.
I try.
Trying doesn't cut it.
Wow. So that's some good stuff.
Holidays are over and so are we.
I think that needs to be a shirt. We need that in the shirt store.
It's pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, it's so good. It's such a great line. I'm surprised Taylor Swift hasn't used that yet. She should totally pick up on that one.
Especially with a little holly, you know?
Yeah, it's a good, you know what? It's a good Christmas shirt to maybe.
Oh, it will definitely be produced very soon.
It'll be a January shirt. yeah, I mean, you know, Jenny Garth is, you know, people love Cocaine Kelly. So the anticipation of Cocaine Kelly in this episode where she's so against it is fantastic. It's fantastic.
And maybe again, that should be the title. Cocaine Kelly
could really get to it. Cocaine
Kelly. Cocaine Kelly. The holidays are over, and so are we. Maybe I mean, we got something.
Yeah, we need a new T-shirt. Yeah.
Yeah. But no, it's really great. I mean, and Jason is so good in this scene. You know, he's really in it. And Bill Taylor knows that this kid is high as.
Well, I mean, look,
he's been.
Let me say one thing. In writing this storyline, other than Meredith, probably everyone in the room had been through some experiences with cocaine. And the thing about, you know, the one is so perfect in this one, you just when you're getting really freaking high, dad comes into the room. So it's such a good, it's a good scene that you can't lose in a scene like that. And then they both play it well, because like you said, Bill knows he's high and Kelly knows right. he's high. And it's a chance for, you know, for Colin to try to find a way to get around it, which he thinks he's doing, but he can't really. So
right.
It's a good scene.
My favorite part of that scene is, Larry?
What's that?
It's when my favorite part of the scene is when they cut back to him and he's wiping his fingers on the tarp because he couldn't resist to go up and touch the painting.
Bill Teller, you mean, right? Yeah. That is really good.
Oh, yeah. Well, this guy was a real,
That was his little character affectation of, I know you're high, man, so I'm going to stick my fingers in your painting.
Hey, Ann wants to know, and you can ask questions here again because we're live. Who decided to cut Kelly's hair that season, Kelly or the show? That's a great question.
It was definitely discussed, because don't forget, when she's coming in the beginning of this is season six, she's been modeling in New York. And so she needed a modern kind of high style look, you know, sophisticated look. And I think Jenny must have wanted it. Maybe she was even coming out of a movie of the week, because this was like set in the first episode of the season. So the kids would have had a chance to do other work during that one hiatus between May and July 4th. And a lot of them did these movies. So that could have been part of that too, where she had to cut her hair for that. And we just kind of went with it and used it as a modeling thing. But yeah, I love the way she looks in this. And I'm not really a short haired guy.
I'm not at all. And I also love Claire when she does short hair as well. So I'm not a short hair guy, but there are instances. And I think Kelly looks phenomenal this season with short hair. Okay, now the whole thing that happens with Nat, it's really interesting. That's another big thing that's playing. I'll show you more cocaine stuff in a little bit. But so you guys, why don't you talk to me, Larry, about, and we mentioned it on the other show, about the Roger Corman film festival that's going to be coming into town, how this all happened. I do want to say Drew had something very cool, and you have something cool in person, but you showed me this. This is the printout, but you have the poster.
Yes, I have one of the four copies that were made.
This is amazing.
This was at a time when the Peachtree After Dark was under Steve Sanders' control.
Yes.
And they were using it for different things. And this was going to be an all-week, you know, a festival. But before we got that idea, it really was, you know, Nat's been a good soldier there. And all he ever does is bring out a mega burger and kind of listen to people's problems and kind of dispense advice. Sometimes bad, one time bad.
Really bad
for the Dylan losing his money story. But you know, we wanted to do something. And you know, I'm talking about now Steve and Jessica, myself, and Meredith. You know, we had a way.
Meredith doesn't count, Larry. Meredith doesn't count.
I'm trying to be generous.
You're being so nice to me. She doesn't count anymore. Yeah.
You know, I mean, she's in timeout. The way I go is I basically wanted to give him his own romantic storyline. And we came up with a storyline about the one that got away. And then thinking about it, you know, we knew that Joey had done lots of work. We had a little bit of fun, you know, which came out of really the fact that, you know, Nat had already played his father, his repressive father, that maybe Nat was an actor early on. And of course, his father made him give it up. And so working with that, we kind of went back and researched what Joey Tata was in. And we saw right away the Roger Corman thing. Went, oh, this is fantastic. So we sat there just like the kids are going to sit there and watch the clip and watch. And we go, oh, there's Joey. Mm-hmm. And we kind of thought we could do that. And we could use that as a catalyst to bring in this other girl and see where it goes and give Joey a kiss. You know,
right.
And actually gets two kisses, because there's also the better kiss is the kiss he gives to Steve Sanders.
Yeah, we'll see that
putting
too.
It together. That's a beautiful, beautiful moment. And it just kind of went, and we cast, and I'll have to ask Diane Young, but I was so thrilled. And I know I had a part of it because she's a friend of mine, but Julie Parrish, who is a dear gal, is no longer with us either. But she had been like a Hollywood starlet, you know, in the 60s and had been in Elvis movies and it was darling. And, she became Joni Diamond, and there was real chemistry between them. And that, you know, it lasted beyond, you know, my stay at the show. They were already in the show to episode.
She was at the end. Yeah.
So, it was just, we gave Joey something real scenes where he could play and he had a heart and a life outside the peach pit. And I think everyone loved it. Joey, he was very grateful. You know?
Let's take a look at them. Discovering, his tapes.
I'm Holy Rollers. Starring Claudia Jennings.
Great actress, died very young.
Louis Quinn, Betty Ann Reese, Roberta Collins, Nat Benson.
Nat Benson, that name sounds familiar.
Yeah, I think it was Mr. America in 1972.
Seldom right and wrong again, Steve. I do believe that that was Nat's stage name.
Arnett?
Yeah.
No.
Fast forward.
No, no way he was in this film.
He could have been. He was an actor in the early 70s. Whoa. Press play. Oh, my God. It's him.
I don't believe it.
This is great. Not only do I have Roger Corman coming, but I got Nat Benson, a bona fide cult film star.
You didn't mention a word of this while you were hanging posters all week in the Peach Pit.
Yeah. Curious, huh?
Maybe he's shy.
Nat? Shy?
So, good, really good stuff, though. What is the movie, Larry? Do you know what the movie is?
Yeah. We watched it. It's a it's a roller derby and gambling.
Holy roller!
They're Claudia Jennings looks great on skates. She was a lovely actress who died on the PCH in a terrible accident. One of the people who died in that road. Mm. She also starred in Fast Company, from which I did the soundtrack. It was a David Cronenberg film, an early David Cronenberg film. My brother and I did the soundtrack for it, which is great. You can get
right.
It. You can get it on Spotify. Listen to it. It's kind of like the mob is trying to fix the roller derby. It's like there's some stuff, and it moves around. It's not one of Roger's better ones, but Jason somehow knew Roger Corman.
Well, Jason Priestley says that he worked on a Roger Corman film.
Yeah.
He emailed Roger Corman and said, would you come do an episode of 90210? He said, yeah, all right, why not?
And he was so dapper and urbane. And it was just, again, we have little nuggets like that through the series where we have just interesting people show up and do it.
Yeah. Drew, I'm curious.
Gave some veracity to it.
In terms of like them watching, them watching a videotape, are they watching a videotape or is it put over a blank TV?
We did rear projection in the Peach Pit After Dark. So where what you'll notice in that scene is you don't see the peach that's backlit.
Right.
That we would change colors and do patterns and things on. We would take that wall out and we would put in a rear projection screen. And then with that back wall removed, it gave us enough throw for the projector to be able to get it big enough on the screen.
Yeah, and if we were going to really do it there.
Well, you did. I mean, look,
if you're talking about the living room, that was actually live tape. But one thing we did do, because you obviously in the film, it said Joey Todd. It didn't say Nat Benson.
So right.
We had to create a role in there, which got put in by special effects or special video.
So who does that? You, Drew, or is that someone else?
No, post-production. That was a post-production thing.
Yeah.
So those are probably placed over their new credits on a blank scene, right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean,
you know what I mean? Yeah.
What's it been, Nat Benson? Yeah, it just occurred to me looking at it this way. I didn't question it when we saw this. I've seen it twice now. We must have done that. Yeah.
Well, this is what you guys are talking about because we do get Roger Corman there, and this is what the setup looks like.
The movie tonight is a personal favorite of mine. I hope you enjoy it.
Thanks, Roger. Now let's watch the magic of these women on wheels and Roger Corman's Unholy Rollers.
Unholy Rollers. I'm going to have
to... Yeah, there's some drugs and sex and gambling and people getting beat up.
Didn't lose a dime.
I mean, the cast was delighted to see him. You can see how excited I was. Because, it's like when we had Yul Houser on. Everyone was thrilled.
Yeah.
Yul Houser, man. The local hero.
Well, I mean, so it is interesting, and the festival is great, and all of this, but it does lead to some really great touching scenes, as you mentioned, Larry, with Joey and Joni. So let's take a look at here.
Yeah, I didn't have much choice. When he got sick, I had to just step up to the plate.
Well, sometimes life makes our choices for us. Still, you were a good actor. Very good.
I came close a couple of times. Had two great parts. A lucky break. I wouldn't be slinging hash for a career.
Well, running a successful business seems like a pretty good career move to me.
You think so?
Yeah, I do.
Kind of nice to hear you say that.
I never thought I'd see you again. Here you are.
You know, I've never forgotten you. I can't say that there wasn't a part of me that always hoped that I'd look over that counter and see you walk through that door.
Well, here I am.
Here we are. So let's sit down, fill me in, and tell me everything, would you?
That could take all night.
You got other plans?
I was going to watch that movie next door.
Oh, hell, I know the ending. Come on, I want to show you around the park.
Really, really, really nice.
Just delightful. I mean, I don't know what to say. I mean, at one point, it's almost like him telling his own story. I got really close, but no one did what he did. He was like 10 years on a series. But
that's the thing.
Oh, and then Julie just lights up the screen. She's so sweet. And, you know, she was so perfect in it. And, you know, I can't believe, you know, in thinking about it now, that we didn't get beat up for like having a scene of that length that wasn't on our stars. I mean, it was really, so that's how much people really believed in that and wanted this to work. And I can hear a lot of Steve Wasserman's voice in that scene at the end, which kind of has like a Casablanca kind of thing. Whoever expected to walk in that door, you know, I can really hear Steve picturing that out because he really had a lot of heart, Steve, and we don't talk about him enough.
We don't. We should do a Steve Wasserman show one day, maybe, you know, and just look at some of the work that he did. Okay, so a couple of the things that are happening here. Boy, this Joe Bradley doesn't have much luck. You know, right now he's in a cast from a football injury, right? And as he's doing the checkups for the football injury, they find a problem with his heart. So tell me about.
Well, yes, Jessica, she was here to tell her story because, yeah, her father had already gone through this heart stuff. So we had all the research in hand, which, you know, again, this is before the internet. The research was hard. You know, it took a while to get it. You had to get it delivered to your place. And, you know, it could take a couple of days. You couldn't just like throw up Google. But we had all this heart research. So we, again, you know, I mean, Cameron Bancroft is a wonderful guy, as we know. And but he was never going to really be the final thing for Donna. We already knew the end game was. So he was never going to go the distance. But for the time being, and again, he was a quick replacement for.
Well, I want to ask you about this. I want to ask you about.
Yeah, he wouldn't have been there if Ray had been there the season. But
we've talked about here on the podcast before that you go into Mr. Spelling's office and you find out Ray is going to have to be written out, which is shocking. And after you adjust your mind to that new information, and
we have the anti-Ray,
Ray is gone. But yeah. So what do you guys do immediately? Do you immediately go like, well, what are we going to do with all this shit for Donna? We have to figure out new stuff. Or where does your mind go? Do you remember that?
Of course, you know, it's just you're a professional, so you don't panic, and you just kind of sit down there and you say, hey, this is great. We can have new ideas now that are going to even be better. You just kind of pump yourself up, you know.
So you guys,
we're going to do something even better. I mean, that's the trick of getting notes. Whatever they tell you, you're going to make it better than what they said. If you can do that, you're always going to be a successful writer. So because everyone's always getting notes. I mean,
so your idea is at that point, let's get a guy here who's a virgin, right?
Take that pressure off right away. We're not going to go down that road. That anger, that, you know, that rage that kind of built up in poor Ray, we never got to explore. And he's also a Christian. You know, there were a lot of things about Joe. But he was so charming, Cameron, what Cameron brought to him, that you really liked Joe and you cared about him. He had a kind of a goofy sense of humor. And he was going to be our athlete, but he was a faded athlete. We were going to tell those athlete stories where athletes weren't able to reach their potential because of illness or something terrible.
Sure.
And in Joe's case, yeah, we just laid it on. And, you know, we had the heart thing. There were so many great things because Donna's father's a heart doctor. So we could really create some tension there. Is Joe going to listen to her Donna's father? She's not going to buy the other doctor's diagnosis. Right.
And of course,
you keep wanting to vertically integrate the show. And you can do that and make your characters inside each other. You don't need guest stars.
So you knew that Joe Bradley or Cameron Bancroft was only going to be a part of the series until the end of that season.
Yeah, his character was not going to end up with Claire, you know?
Or anybody.
Right.
Yeah.
No.
Okay, so let's watch them. I have a question for Drew, but let's watch them.
With the coach?
No, by myself. There's something wrong with my heart.
What? Why wouldn't you tell me?
Because I didn't want you to worry.
Well, what's wrong? What did my dad say?
Well, the team doctor heard something weird, and now your father thinks that I've got some kind of a congenital heart thing. A defect.
Oh, my God.
I just got back from the meeting with the coach and the athletic director, and they want me to get a second opinion.
Yeah, you should. I know my dad always recommends that.
Oh, I hate to say this, Donna, but I'm hoping the next guy will say your father's wrong.
Yeah, me too.
You know, again, that's good. It's a good conflict between them, which is non-sexual. But yeah, it's a triangle. Very again. Joe, amazing. Donna, and the father. You know,
the team doctor thinks that
he gave Joe a clean bill of health. You know, it just happens that way.
Is that shocking? That the team
Joe
doctor
is a scholarship student. I mean, CU is in the pack. Whatever, pack 19. We never really had to talk about it. They play, I know, Southern California universities on their schedule because they have the stealing of all that stuff. Yeah, that was fun. We did all that stealing the mascot stuff.
Sometimes I imagine Cameron Bancroft's call back home when he's thinking about leaving, and they're like, "What's going on? Why would you leave? One, I had an injury. Two, I got into this fight in this court case with this Ray Pruitt." Three, now I have a heart issue. I can't play football. I just don't want to be here anymore. This town is awful to me.
I know. You know, I say it a lot of times, but, you know, some guest stars have to serve the story. You know,
he really
is. It's nothing personal. Right. You know, they're serving the story, and there's glory in that.
Drew, what I wanted to ask you about in that is what I loved so much is the attention to detail that is at the college. One, we see the cash station, which is just so amazing that you have an ATM there. But all of this stuff, there's a store, there's all this stuff. I know we've talked about making the college, but do you recall putting some of these touches together?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the college set was huge. And, you know, so something like that where you're going to spend as much time, because that was stage three, and it was about half of stage three. The Peach Pit After Dark was maybe a quarter of stage three, and then we had a swing set space. And so the college took up most of the room. It was one of those things where we had to work with what crap was hanging from the ceilings, and we had to build walls around things. So it kind of steered us into how we were going to sort of build the upper parts. And that kind of helped us figure out where the columns and things would be placed. Mm. And we knew that there was going to be a lot of different things were going to be shot in there. So there's a set of stairs that go up that turn around that kind of dead end when everybody just gets off camera on a platform. there's a garden entrance that kind of goes outside with plant backgrounds. It seems like you're going into some exterior place. There's kind of the bookstore-ish kind of end with a hallway. It's where the ATM machine was. And there was a double-sided glass display that we could put different things in and change it all the time. I think that was the store because there was also a door next to it as well. But there's a couple little like dead end spaces as well too, where somebody could duck and have a little conversation.
Yeah.
It's funny, the ATM machine, because we were going to make an ATM machine, and I actually found somebody who had surplus ATM machines in Alhambra. And I went out there and looked at them, and it was an ATM machine with the safe. They just gave us the whole thing. They thought it was so cool that 90210 wanted it because we were, you know, a hit show. So they were
you made Condor Cash. We didn't come up with Condor Cash. You came up with Condor Cash, I think.
It's probably one of those things that we did like over on Calvert, you know, just trying to figure out what things would be, and ran it by a bunch of choices by lawyers to figure out what they should be, you know.
Exactly.
Like putting people's names on tombstones, that kind of thing. You know, we
go over the list. We would have it on scripts. I mean, every script had to be vetted that way. Yeah. That's why we tend to use our friends, you know,
I'd go out into like whether it's, you know, like the construction stage and go, "Hey guys, I got to do some tombstones. Who wants their name on a tombstone?" And so they go, "Hey, I do." And you go, "Okay,
we know it's kind of clear."
Yeah, absolutely. Cause they'll say yes. They're really famous. I used to kill Jesse Helms all the time.
I am going to play an old ad and we'll come back with more.
Well, well, well. When was the last time you checked out the Beverly Hills 90210 Show shop? Because now it's loaded with so much more stuff. Did you ever want to join the gang at CU? Because now you can wear your official CU t-shirt. Or want to get into the fun with America Zip Code? Represent with this cool swag. Or maybe you have an invite to the Peach Pit After Dark and need the coolest shirt ever. We have loaded the store with so much more. So don't be a squeeze. Head over to Beverly Hills 90210showshop.com for all the latest goods.
Okay, just some things here. Georgia says, let me tell you guys for the 5,000th time how thankful I am for this podcast. Lisa sure. thinks we should definitely do a Steve Wasserman show. It's a fantastic idea. Yeah. Cindy Lee says,
I'll do some impressions.
Well, you know, the thing that I love about Steve Wasserman is that he wrote lyrics to the song. And I have the lyrics. Jessica, before she passed, sent me the lyrics somewhere, so I have to pull those. And the person who wrote the 90210 theme, I can't think of his name
John
right
Davis,
now. John Davis. He recorded it for them. He recorded the theme song with a woman's voice singing Steve Wasserman's lyrics. and then let's see what else we have. Any other comments? Rebecca Shin says she wants a guy like Joe Bradley.
Oh,
Rebecca.
Well, good for Rebecca. She just
life is changing
like
for Rebecca. I mean, since we started this podcast.
Larry. Remember, she lives in Pennsylvania. Joe is in Beaver Falls, Pennsylvania. So
look him up. Things are happening.
Yeah. He still might be there.
Okay. So let's see what else we have here. The other thing, of course, is this little storyline. Let me find it.
Val, can I ask you for some advice?
I'd be honored.
Actually, I was hoping to tap into your more devious side.
Well, in that case, I'm not honored, but ask anyway.
Okay. I was in Susan's office. I answered the phone, and it was that Jonathan guy.
You should have hung up on him.
You're right, I should have, but I didn't. I took a message, but then I didn't give it to Susan.
And I'm gathering it was a message you didn't want her to get.
You could say that.
All right, well, this is a no-brainer. You go in tomorrow morning, you write the message down on those little while-you-were-out pads and throw it on the messenger desk, and eventually she'll find it.
That'll work.
Glad I could help.
Great Valerie advice. All right, so Jonathan Castman is coming back.
Yeah, Castan.
He's coming back into town. Tell me about that.
Well, again, you know, if you want to challenge Brandon, you know, make him uncomfortable, and again, you're working a triangle. You got, you know, you got him, and you got Jonathan, and you got you know,
Susan Keith.
Yeah. And yeah, it was great fun last time they were together. You know, he really got under, you know, I don't know if the actor himself got under Jason's skin, but it really came through that it was a, you know, good irritation. And so yeah, we just try to keep that thing going. And you know, I think we're going to play it off at where he shows up again one more time. So yeah, again, this is real, you know, it's more story in that relationship in the end. And I don't think at this point either we knew Susan was going to be gone. I'm not quite sure when we made that decision because, you know, in the end, I mean, Susan is the only woman to really dump him the way she did. I mean, he gets dumped in the whole 10 years, I think. Is that true? Right. Sherry Weiss of Teen Dramology. Yeah. Is that the only time he gets, you know, by someone who actually has a longer relationship with?
I don't know if you know, but Dr. Weiss takes notes of the other podcast. And I feel like the only reason why she doesn't take notes of our podcast is because we're also close and connected. But I'm sure she's she's got a list of notes of things I've messed up.
Yeah, I mean, I guess Kelly dumps him, but not it wasn't like a dump. I guess it was a dump. Yeah, I mean, but she was also with Dylan at that point. I don't know. Right. I always thought Susan, I mean, that's really devastating. She kind of... He's, you know, he's got the whole thing planned for her for the summer, and he's given up something already, and then she just kind of unloads on him.
I will say, in terms of like the people that you guys could have kept and done more stuff with, Susan Keats is definitely one of those characters.
Yes, I think so too. Yeah, that's why, you know, because again, it happened for Kathleen, you know, where we, you know, didn't have any plans to keep it, but she just had to be kept. She was so useful.
A little bit of info, I think. I don't think that there was a long-term plan to keep her because the offices were never built as sets on stage.
The Condor.
That was just a location. There was no long-term plan to give her a place that we could take up and put down that we would have to do that for so long.
Yeah. I think, you know, the newspaper kind of came out of the high school stuff. And I think really we didn't want to continue. We knew we could always go to TV and you know, again, be more modern. So I think Drew's correct. Though she could have become the manager of the TV station. And, you know, I mean, if she jumped in bed with, you know, say, I'm trying to think of sort of Steve. If she was useful to us in a certain way, that we could have gotten stories out of her with another character, another relationship. But I just think she served the story. She, you know, became a big act as season ender where Brandon gets, you know, this because we knew we were going to go back to Kelly. I mean, we were looking at the end game always. So other people were just,
they're fillers,
seat holders.
I don't know. I pulled another Nat clip. I don't know what it is. Let's see.
Hey, Nat, can I get a pot of coffee for my slaves next door? They're working really hard to get this festival off the ground.
Ask Willie.
You know, I know you said you wouldn't come tonight, but I really think you should reconsider.
No.
Why not? Is it Corman? Did he stiff you?
He hasn't got anything to do with it. Roger Corman's a great guy.
Then what was it? We saw the film. You were very funny.
Thank you.
This isn't making sense. What happened?
It's personal. I don't want to talk about it, okay?
Was it a woman? It was a woman. Okay. One of the actresses, was it? One of those roller derbettes, huh?
She wasn't in the picture.
Well, who is she? And what happened to her?
Told you, I don't want to talk about it.
Okay, forget I asked.
Listen, you go have a good time tonight. Send my best to Roger Corman.
Okay?
But I was going to say, Steve says he's going to break him down, and that's how he's going to get...
Do you have the last clip of them together? The next reaction.
I do have that. Yeah, we'll show that next. But so that's what we have to do here sometimes with people when we try to get them on the podcast, right? Steve said he's going to break them down and get them to go to this thing. So Jason Wiles, that's what we have to do. We got to break them down and get them to come. Wear them down. Yeah. So I mean, really good stuff there. I always think that Joey and Ian have really good stuff together. I mean, their chemistry is also really great and funny. And like, they're always kind of having these sort of, Steve is kind of always going to Nat for things, right? Especially in those couple of seasons.
Sure. Oh, and it's great having Joey around as a character constantly because we go back to the Peach Pit all the time, which was one of the greatest sets.
And again, for us, it's pages inside because, you know, again, we're manufacturing this series. I mean, there's all this template we have to fill. So many hours, so many pages in a set. Yep. And so, yeah, we love that Peach Pit set. And that's why, you know, Joey Tata had a 10-year job, basically. Because also, you know, it's a place where you could have the whole cast together. So there's always that possibility.
Right.
But, you know, it wasn't the very first season. It was not, though, because it was much smaller.
Yeah.
It was there was the counter. There was a room for stools. And then the wall. There was
That was the Apple Pan. The Apple Pan that Chuck talks about. It evolved from being just the Apple Pan in his mind to a bigger place. And, you know, again, the show went beyond its first 13.
Drew, Tori told me that a mega burger is a fat burger.
Yes, 100%.
That's awesome.
Never anything else. Always fat burgers. There was a fat burger literally on Sepulveda, like right around the corner. So Gary would just call him and go, I need 40 fat burgers.
Yeah. I don't know if fat burgers all over the country, but I know it's here in LA. If you really want a true mega burger, just order yourself a fat burger and you're all good to go.
Yep. Absolutely.
All right, let's see what else here. This is the clip that you were talking about, Larry.
There you go.
Thanks. So Nat, how does it feel seeing a woman you love after 25 years?
Sweet. Really sweet.
That's it? That's all you're gonna give us?
All right. I'll give you one more thing.
A great big yes! I guess the film festival was a success.
Well, kind of changed my life.
Oh, that's great.
Now, you two are great.
Nice. Good, really beautiful stuff there. Larry, you're muted.
That's a very good kiss.
Yeah. But you do give Nat a lot of stuff with this, and it was really nice to see, right?
Yeah. I mean, now, you know, then we used it again. We played it out through the end of this season. I mean, you know, we did something. We probably jumped the shark a little bit where she gets pregnant. She's pregnant. You know, it's just, you know, I mean, are there storylines I regret? I'm not really, because it's kind of delightful. And in a way, people have babies now this age, you know.
I mean, I don't know. We've covered that episode where we find that out.
Well, you say it's your birthday. It's a 2-hour.
Yeah. And then A Mate for Life, I know we've covered where she gives birth. But were there big conversations in the writer's room? Can this happen? Were those kinds of things happening?
We felt that there was enough case study on it that was possible. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
Think about it like this. When you do enough episodes, you can literally do anything at some point. Right.
You know, I mean, again, because we're eating up a lot of story, you know, and we were slow playing story, which is just our style. But still, you had to have a lot of story. We kind of like that. I mean, there was a good response to Nat and Jody, though. People liked it. Again, we didn't have Jim and Cindy anymore, so we didn't have that other couple to service. You know, even then, we didn't have, what do we have? I mean, Mel was married to Jackie then, yes.
I mean, you had some of them around when needed.
And the Martins, you know.
Larry, one thing, we're on this topic now, but one thing that it's always confused me is that Mel could always be brought back, right? You know, he became, what is his role then? Is he a day player? What is Matthew Lawrence?
No, he's a recurring character. You know,
character.
But as available, you know, like available. We would have to, I bet. But they might have had to leave in a stronger hole. But you can ask Diane that call. We'll ask Diane that
Matthew
question.
Matthew Lawrence is that. Anne Gillespie is that, right? But yes. Jim and Cindy are only special guest stars. We never see them become reoccurring characters. Why is, I mean, that's probably a Diane.
Well, they are. I mean, they're in they're all opening credits. I mean,
no, I mean later on after they left the show, right? Why did they not get?
They're just special guest stars. They're just special guest stars because, first of all, there's a sense of pride, I'm sure, for them. They're not going to just do it, you know, for you know, the price we want to pay or whatever. There just wasn't an easy way back to extend it. And plus, also, they were also older. The kids were that much older. They were another year older. You don't really want to have the parents there all the time.
Fair enough. Okay.
I mean, you know, after season five, I mean, they take over the Walsh house. The parents go to Hong Kong and, the kids live at the house, which, you know, and it becomes this other thing. I mean, you know, we set that up great. They think they're selling the house. They wreck the house. And then, Nat has a good scene in that one, too. Nat, you know, is the one who disapproves of the big party where they're going to wreck the Walsh house because they think it's in escrow.
My point is just that, you know, we see Felice, right, and Doc Martin. We see Mel a lot. We see Anne a lot. But we don't ever see Jim and Cindy a lot. And since the show was centered on this family from Minnesota, it's sometimes odd to me that the Walshes didn't just move up to San Francisco and could come down every once in a while and be a part of what's going on in their lives. Or did they need them to get out?
Their quote for the show was at a certain price and a certain level now that was not going to work in it, you know, other than for special things. I mean, I'm trying to think, after they left, we brought Cindy back. And when Brandon goes to Hong Kong, they're both in the Hong Kong episode.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, but it's are they in the final episode of the series?
They are. I think so. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it's just interesting. But you think it's more of a actors management situation that they were once. Stars of the series, you know. So it's hard to go from being a star of the series to a reoccurring star.
Well, reoccurring star. But I mean, they'll do a shot here and there, and they probably
for sure.
But yeah, no, I think so. That's correct.
Okay, and let's take a look at this last thing here.
Thanks, Dad.
So let's talk about cocaine. I just want to add this, that
They're not in the series finale.
No, right, okay.
And so they're not in the Hong Kong episode. Only
no, Jim is in the
Hong Kong. That's all we could afford. Yeah, thank she you. Was away then. That's right. Yeah. Thank you for reminding me of that episode that I produced and wrote. Yeah, okay, that's good. Yeah.
And right, well, the super fan couldn't remember. But I did. Yeah. I thought I didn't know if they were in the finale. Why would they not be?
You seem so confident. You seem so confident.
Well, because it just felt like, why would they not be? Right?
Yeah. But I think for that reason, it just became a point of pride, perhaps.
Perhaps, yeah.
But this thing here, I mean, again,
someone made up a good point, though. Catherine West says this is a good point. Kelly and Donna's parents were also used as vehicles to further those characters in their angst. Not so much with Jim and Cindy. They were a stable force, as was Brandon. So I think that's a very valid point. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they weren't a force of conflict. I mean, absolutely. Yeah. After Jim. Well, Jim.
There's
Jim
only
and,
so
Jim
much...
and Dylan. But I was going to say, yeah, just back to this scene we just saw.
Sure.
You know, again, we had all been down this cocaine road. You know, some more than others, and some continued on it. So the idea of this scene here, where you get the check and you roll the check up, or that what you could do with, you know, how we could really debase cocaine Kelly by rolling up the father's check, or, you know, saying fuck you to the father, and now she's just gonna let herself go because what's the point? She's a broken child.
Really,
yeah. I mean, that very, very good end there. Very believable after the shit he puts you through in this episode, and the disappointment level that she's in, and that Jenny Garth brings to it, and very satisfying. And launching now, I think we must be going into Sweep's episode. I feel like
has to be
because
well, this is a great episode and great ender. Drew, yeah. I know you don't know exactly what the cocaine was here. But what is it normally? Do you have any of that working knowledge?
Honestly, you know, frankly, in this kind of thing where, like, if you're doing a movie where somebody has to ingest something, then there's a whole process for that, which is totally different. But this, which...
There's no ingesting.
There's none of that. It's really just tapping on it. Most likely powdered sugar is my guess.
Yeah, again, we were not allowed to see that. You were not allowed to see
that. Oh, yeah, absolutely. There. Yeah.
Well, talk to me about that, Larry. Is television now different that you think you could see it?
Again, this was an 8 o'clock show. You know, it played like 8 to 9. So, but on Fox, they were allowed like 9 to 10. It was actually a 9 o'clock show because it was on Fox. Fox only programmed 2 hours a night. They didn't program the 10 o'clock hour then. But you couldn't show that. That's why, you know, in the Brian methamphetamine story, I mean, in the David Silver Brian methamphetamine story, I came up with the idea of the orange juice in the meth because they wouldn't let us snort it, but I wanted to be able to ingest it. So they bought the fact that you could drink it. And Alex, friends of mine, said it was totally possible. You get a little nourishment, but you don't waste any time.
Liz wants to ask a question about Drew's music collection behind him. Feel free to ask that question. We're happy to. I know Drew is a huge record collector and has a Facebook group.
Audiophile.
Yes. Thank you for that. Yes. So it's really nice stuff. I mean, and some of the you know, Bill Taylor leaving and all that stuff, and her speeding down to the airport to see him go and all that stuff. It's really going to create the next moments here for Kelly Taylor, right?
Well, she went all out. He suckered her in full. She was all in. Jackie was happy. And even though Jackie was probably wary, and you got the house there, she's like a girl left at the altar. You know, it was a kind of, we crushed her spirit.
Yeah.
Which is what we hope to do.
Lisa wants to know who thought of having her roll up the check to do the line.
You know, I'm going to give Steve Wasserman credit for that. Though we all applauded it, I'm sure. It could have been any one of us culprits, but I think I'm going to hang it on Steve.
Yeah. Okay. That's fair enough. Well, I think we covered everything in this episode, right? Is there anything that didn't happen? No.
Well, the Brandon Susan, where he has to come clean that he didn't give her the that he didn't, you know, he didn't take the message for and stuff, which is, again, that's just Biden time episode really for them. You know, that's not a big, this is not a big Brandon episode, but you get to see the fact that, you know, that this guy gets under his skin, which means he really cares about Susan.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we're going to build that up and break his heart, which, again, that's our job.
Right. And really beautiful Joey Tata stuff, nice Nat stuff in this. And that's
really strong.
Why we covered this week. All right. So this has been that. I want to let everybody know that we go ahead, Larry.
No, I was going to say, and really well directed by Jason. It really has got some pizzazz in it. And, you know, again, that scene with Kelly at the end there, there's no dialogue in it. She's like doing a couple of different things. We're really working with her from different angles. And he's building up a whole sequence, which, you know, is very satisfying.
Always fun to work on a Jason-directed episode, too.
Why is that, Drew? Tell me that answer to that.
Location scouts.
That means going to Hooters for lunch, basically.
What it means is Jason could go, I'm going to order two bottles of wine. Would anybody like some? And Paul Wagner would just go, where'd you go?
And then he would drink it anyway. He'd have his scotch anyway or something.
I want to say,
we don't talk about Paul enough, but you know,
That's another episode with Paul Wagner. We should do.
Yeah.
What were you gonna say, Pete? I want everybody to go to LarryMullen.com because there's something happening on your website right now that is really awesome.
I'm trying to put some things in the pool. So you got some pages. Kid, the pool guy's kid, yeah, a little young adult novel.
Tell me about the pool guy's kid, Larry.
Murder, mayhem, and romance. You know,
what's going on with this? This is so you're giving people that watch our podcast an opportunity to or listen to our podcast, whatever, however you get it. You're giving people an opportunity to go to your website and read the pages as it's coming to be.
Sort of. I mean, I've written most of it now, but I'm just releasing it slowly. As Drew knows, in the music business, you know, you've got to constantly be releasing new material. Mm-hmm. Books take a long time, so I thought, you know, Charles Dickens did this.
Yeah. Oh, did he?
Wells.
He put on his website. Well,
I've been putting it out there just to see what kind of reactions could I build up some excitement. And also, you know, it's helpful to me as I'm building it. And I'll probably go back and change it again. I'm going to post, so far I've posted, I think, 13 pages. I'm going to post another 20 odd pages probably by Monday. You know, my web designer takes a little bit of time, but I'm going to give it to her on Friday, see if she gets it up on Monday.
All right. So And then is there some point, I read 35 pages, now you got to buy the book, right? At some point that's going to happen?
I don't know.
I mean, that seems like it makes the most sense. I mean, I'm so invested in the story now.
Well, maybe so, but I have to then publish the book. It'll take about a year. I want to get an agent for this and, you know, sell it, you know, in a different way perhaps. But I'm having fun writing it because I'm writing it in two different realities. I'm writing it as a past story and also right now.
So that's interesting.
It's building in two ways, and it gives me a chance to kind of create some momentum in the story. But yeah, I like it. It's you know, like I said, it's kind of a, you know, there's murder, mayhem, and romance because there's the main character. There's going to be three fantastic women in his life while he's going through this, you know, being chased by the Armenian mob, basically.
Oh, I love this.
So yeah, it's fun, and it gets a good view. It all takes place in L.A., and it's a Beverly Hills centric kind of thing. And but it gets out to the valley, and it gets out to the West Side, and it's got lots of local stuff. And we clean a lot of pools.
So everybody needs to go to LarryMullen.com to check out the first 13 pages, and maybe even more if you get there on Monday. There might be some more coming.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, definitely will be. Just a question of what time, but yeah, they're going to be coming out. You know, like I'm much down the road with this, so I'm enjoying it.
I'm really excited because we're working through getting Diane Young, the casting director of 90210, on this show. Chuck and I met with her last week. Larry, of course, made the connection. Denise connected you. This has been a homecoming for her and all this. So this is going to be very exciting.
Came out of the Reddit talk we did.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, and I've been following on those Reddit boards, actually. There is a whole other crowd of people on there, and they're also, you know, total nerds, you know, same thing. Dr. Weiss, get on that Reddit board.
But what's cool is that she's going to go season by season with us about casting everybody that you've ever wanted to know, who wasn't cast, who was up for the part. She already told me someone that was up for Emily Valentine, and my mind was blown by it. So there's just going to be so many things that you're going to find out, and it's really going to answer a lot of questions. So that's
She's never talked about the show before. I mean, she's
never talked.
She went up to the state of Washington, and no one ever heard of her. I mean, she kind of got, because you don't Facebook her, or do you Facebook Diane? I don't think she's on Facebook.
True.
Have you talked? No.
Well, yeah, but the friend is the
it's Kelly McDonald. Kelly. Yeah.
Yes.
No, right. Kelly's accessible. But no, Diane kind of went off the grid, basically. Yeah, so it was really kind of out of the blue. This person kind of wrote me a thing, and I kind of developed a little relationship. She said, my aunt was, it is
Diane Sherry Weiss. I'm not a Reddit girl, but
occasionally I snoop. Okay.
All right. This has been great this week. Yeah. Good seeing you, Drew. Thank you for joining us here. It's always nice to have you here.
Before we go, I want to ask Drew, what are you going to see? Any shows? Any rock and roll?
No. At the moment, no. I just saw some Jack White shows.
Nice.
Shows showing up. But as soon as I saw it, I went and looked and it said sold out. I'm like, well, that's not fair. No, my daughter's on an internship for 3 months, so I kind of I'm kind of holding off. Like, I didn't go see Fish.
Wow. Yeah. Well, it should be noted that Chuck's daughter and his son-in-law were in Colorado for two shows.
Oh, they were good.
Larry, it was their 49th and 50th.
I want to tell you, Larry,
about that before.
I was sitting at a Chinese restaurant this week, and I heard two men talking about the show that you went to, and they had a similar feeling about
the Jackson Brown.
Jackson Brown show.
Yeah, you know, I've seen him a lot. My son is called Jackson. He really wanted to go. It was his birthday. Otherwise, I probably wouldn't. But my buddy plays bass with him and has played forever. He's a 75-year-old bass guy. He's on stage whopping it up. Bob Glaub, represent Venice.
You want to hear something cool, Larry? My first concert, Jackson Brown.
Amazing.
Running on Empty, Meriwether Post.
What? Bob was playing bass then.
Jackson is Running on Empty, you're saying.
That's amazing.
He's done now.
Running on Empty. Yeah. Well, that happens. Yeah. I'm not going to go any more legacy shows, but we're going to see Gaslight Anthem, which is fronted by Brian Fallon, a guy I love. And Gaslight Anthem is a kind of a famous Jersey band. A little bit.
I know, and I'm so disappointed I'm going to be in Jersey now when that happens, so I won't be able to see it.
And his wife is a giant fan, so we'll miss it.
I will recommend a new band for you, though, Larry.
All right. Yes,
it's a band called Wet Leg. The album is called Wet Leg.
It's
awesome. My vinyl, that's where I found it.
I've been like obsessed on YouTube watching the Tedeschi Trucks Wheel of Soul tour. It's so great. There's nobody better in rock and roll than this band. Just got to see it.
Derek Trucks is incredible. I mean, Susan Tedeschi. I used to watch her long before him.
I know. She's insane. I mean, there's so much artistry in that band. They're the royal couple of rock and roll. You have to take a look at them. And it's so great on YouTube. You can watch every live show. Pete, tell Christina, get on YouTube. She can watch a Gaslight Anthem live
show. She'll watch the show on the 16th.
Anyway, happy listening.
Yeah, thank you so much, guys. We will see everybody next week with more Beverly Hills 90210 show.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.